Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another early episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I am Jack Allen. First, go follow me on all the socials at Kojak Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to support the show, I got a website, conspiracyorjustacoincidence.com, which I got to do a better job updating with the newest shows, but I realize that. I got a few new Patreon supporters. Phil, thank you for supporting the show. Jesse, always supporting the show, and many others. Dan, I'm getting all these new supporters. It is so nice of you guys. Wow, like just so honored. And I've been getting nice messages from random people. And guys, like, that's the nicest thing in the world. Like, you don't know how much it means to me. And as always, I'm tweeting out the link to the show. Hopefully I tweeted the right link to the show. All right, we're all good. So thank you guys again. You can support the show, blah, blah, blah. Leave a review, blah, blah, blah. You get the idea. You get the idea. So last episode, I can remove this for a second. Last show, we were talking the Jesuits. We're talking the book Rulers of Evil. Somebody already reached out to me about the book. Amazing, amazing book. Dude, like, I am learning so much about, and I'm almost turning into Johnny Cerucci, dude. I'm almost at that level where I think maybe they were behind it all. Maybe they were definitely behind America. Maybe they're behind all these secret societies. So last episode, we talked about how education system. Jesuits started free colleges in Europe. If you were a wealthy person, whatever, you're a well-off family, you went to a Jesuit college. All of our founding fathers went to Jesuit colleges. And so what did they start doing? They started doing plays. And I talked about this last episode, so go listen to that, but I always like to do a little overview. Lots happens in a week. But the one example was, so there's these, like, the Dukes of Bavaria, and they're sitting at this, with this play that's put on by the Jesuits, and it's mocking the Protestants. And the 12 big boss Dukes, after the show, they leave the show, and they go immediately to do Ignatius Loyola's spiritual exercises, which is what he came up with by talking to the Black Mary and black, not skin color, black statue that he's worshiping, which is banned. And, you know, the Bible says not to create images of our Lord and Savior and et cetera, et cetera. But they did it. They did it because why do they need to listen to the Bible, dude? They don't care. They make their own Bible. And so they said that these shows are worth more than 100 sermons to convert people. And what do we see today? Shakespeare, he did all Jesuit, even the Jesuits were banned in England. He did all these were Jesuit themes, symbolism. Shakespeare plays, there's symbolism under symbolism under symbolism. And what do we have today in all of our movies? Symbolism under symbolism under symbolism. So they created that. Since they created the educations, they wanted to lower the knowledge of the people. They realized that's all these Jesuit-ran colleges, and even if they weren't Jesuit-ran, they would take the curriculum that they were teaching because they were so popular, this humanist, that's what it was called, humanist curriculum. Oh my God, you gotta listen to the last episode, but they teach how to be sneaky, how to avoid. A Jesuit priest taught a morality class, and he's taught how do you, if your wife is an adulterer, and the wife is questioned by the husband. How does she avoid being, can she lie? And he said, well, it's not really a lie because adultery in the Bible is synonymous with idolatry, worshiping idols. And since, were you doing that? No, I wasn't doing that. Well, then you're not an adulterer. This is the stuff that they taught. And I talked last episode, the huge statistic, history courses were required, like 88% of colleges in 1912. Now, one out of the top 50 ranked, whatever that means, but top 50 ranked colleges requires a history class. Like, guys, that is insane. And you can see that in our public. You ever see like those man on the streets, they go up and they talk to them and the people know nothing. They know literally nothing. So that was about last episode. A lot of deceit. What they also did was they were able to, the Jesuits at this time were catching a lot of heat. And in the New World, the Protestants went there to avoid the Catholics and the Church of England. So they came like a sought after figure, and this was, or sought after group, like a group they're trying to attack. And this was so they would see like good alliance members with the Protestants. Just saw all this stuff. We talked about French and Indian War, Ben Franklin, who we're going to talk about this episode, George Washington, William Penn, all Jesuits, all Freemasons. They're one and the same. They're synonymous with each other. Jesuits started Freemasonry. And I got some photos I'll search on the internet and share the screen. And so if you're listening, I'll describe it. If you're watching on YouTube, and we get a few hundred watching on YouTube. So, because some of these things, like we're going to go over, I think next episode is true just symbolism in DC. Like, it is crazy, dude. I'm so excited to do that episode. And this one's setting this up to see the symbolism. Whew, I got to go quick. Relatively, my lovely, lovely fiance's mom, the CNN watcher, is coming down. And the dad knows, and I told this story last night on my show, but her dad, who he knows I have the show, he asked me what the NWO was. And I just thought that was so funny. Like, you know, I told him I'd talk to him more about it. I can't like write him a book. Can't explain thousands of years of history in a short text, but more and more people, dude, they are waking up. They know something's wrong. They can't put their finger on what's wrong, but they know something's wrong. So let's just scooch it up a little bit here. Okay, so let's start off. Let's get started. So in the 1500s, kings had the divine right to rule. We know that they were the voice of God. And now, even though I am like somewhat of a monarchist, I don't know if I believe certain people have been ordained by God to rule over us. And not to go down like a rabbit hole, but I'm so fed up with our politicians. I despise them. I disdain them with every fiber of my being. They willingly, purposely hurt us. They're people, the people they're supposed to be watching over. I mean, they're just the most despicable people of this world. But regardless, the divine right was being challenged at this time. And the Enlightenment and the rise of like the deists, and Robert Bellarmine, all these people, they were challenging this right. Like, oh, you're not really free under this monarchy king. Wait, just imagine a democracy where everyone could vote for the best situation, which obviously we see what that brought us. Wonderful things, wonderful things. So the private theologian to Clement the 13th, 1592 to 1605, who became Cardinal Bellarmine in 1599, he went against the trend and said God did not anoint kings, but gave sovereignty to confer their sovereignty upon whomever they chose. So the people had the right to depose and start anew. And this is I think that I agree with that for the most part, right? Sun Tzu was the art of war, which keeps coming up, these moves. And there's like speculation that maybe this Jesuit priest actually wrote the art of war because the Black Pope, Leonardo Ricci. I didn't get too much into that because I couldn't understand, but that's the theory this guy's putting. But anyway, the Sun Tzu quote is, making the enemy move as one wishes. The great science is to make him desire everything you wish him to do and provide him with all the means to help you in this without him realizing it. I didn't pay attention to anything I just read. Holy crap. It says, making the enemy move as one wishes, the great science is to make him desire everything you wish him to do and provide him with all the means to help you in this. So Okay, so you want to make your enemy do the things that you want them to do, because then you don't have to do it. They're going to champion that message or that move. So many tried to debate Bellarmine, which only raised his popularity because he's taken down the kings of Peg. So two huge names that agreed with him, though, at the time were John Locke and Allerghan Sidney. Allerghan, he's unknown to most Americans, got beheaded for trying to kill King Charles. Okay, so the open hostility to Roman Catholicism ignored his trips frequently to Rome. And this is what they do, right? So the whole point of this is this guy, he supposedly got beheaded for trying to kill the king. But he was openly hostile to Roman Catholicism, but yet he made frequent trips to go hang out with the Pope. He hangs out with Jesuits and Louis XIV, who is a Roman Catholic monarch of France. So basically, he's preaching all the Jesuit talking points while saying all the things that the Catholic bashers said in England. So, like, they liked him, right? So he's trashing on this guy on the Catholic Church, even though he's hanging out with the Catholic Church. Just like a normal politician type of move. Like how ours, you know, they despise the Democrats. Oh, blah, blah, blah. I hate the Democrats. But yet, they worked with him. They don't hate him. We see him laughing and shaking hands. And this reminds me, like, this similar kind of tactic is used. Like, when I was in court, my lawyer, you know, I paid for my lawyer. He's, like, chumming up with the cop that arrested me and chumming it up with the judge. They're laughing as my life is sitting in the line. Like, this is what powerful people do to trick us. It's disgusting. But, yeah, so that's what this guy was doing. And so, just like, yeah. So, he wasn't saying anything, like, earth-shattering about Catholics. He was saying what everyone in England was already saying. So they're just happy they have somebody that's agreeing with them, that's agreeing with their viewpoint. We have that exact, people haven't changed at all. And then John Locke, he was America's philosopher. He endorsed Cardinal Bellarmine. Jefferson, Madison, both read Bellarmine. Oh, thanks, Timothy. Thanks for saying that, dude. When they were young and impressionable in college. So all of our founding fathers read Bellarmine's books. Bellarmine encouraged the notion, you aren't free. If you aren't free, it's time for a revolution. Which is weird because, again, nowhere in the Bible does it say Jesus. Jesus says, overthrow the Romans. That's what we got to do. That's what we got to do. So this liberation theology, and to liberate, you first must have tyranny. And then you would have violence. So what do you need to create first? If you want to create a revolution, you need to create a tyrant. Pretty much makes sense, right? And King George was that tyrant. Sun Tzu, another quote. I'm going to pay attention to this one. Multiply your spies. This is huge. Multiply your spies. Put them everywhere in the very palace of an enemy prince. Have a list of officers who are at his service. Know their first, last names, children, relatives, friends, servants. Let nothing happen that is not known to you. And so King George at this time, why don't we pull up King George? Now that I got my, I think it was King George II, I believe. That's who we're talking about. King George. Yeah, great. Let's pull him up. So, you know, I always like seeing the photos of people. I don't know why. Oh, he looks like a boss, dude. Oh, man. He's killing it. He looks dope. All right, look at this, like, cow shirt or whatever he's wearing. Polka dots, dude. Wow, badass. So King George was... Thank you. Weez Play-Doh Snakes, thanks for always coming, dude. And I love your comments. You rock. You rock, dude. So King George, he was ashamed of his son. Okay, George II was the last British monarch to lead... This freaking guy was the last British monarch to lead his army into battle versus Spain in 1739. His son, Frederick William, was a partier. He was a playboy. He was running up tabs, entertaining and bass foreign people. And the king, he said, son, I'm cutting your allowance, dude. You're acting a fool. You're drinking, you're womanizing, you're embarrassing us, essentially. And he made him move from this St. James Palace because he got to put him out of that limelight. Like the guy was, I imagine he was like fell asleep on park benches, you know? And you're like, dude, you're the prince. You can't be sleeping naked on the goddamn park bench. Thanks, Weez Play-Doh. Weez Play-Doh said, appreciate your work and attitude. Dude, you're too. I appreciate you. I appreciate all of you. So, regardless, one day, horse ride, William, Frederick William, he's trying to clean up his act, dude. He's riding. Let's pull him up. I mean, God, we're here. We got it. Prince Frederick William. So, England. Let's make sure we got England. So he's riding his horse one day. There he is. So he's riding his horse one day. Oh, damn. Look at that beard. And he's riding his horse. I said that for a third time. And it starts to rain. And he sent Prince Edward to fetch some cards, who was his brother. He came back with a Scottish guy, John Stuart III, Earl of Bute. Now, we know this name, right? I've heard John Stuart. I know the Stuarts. And he was an immediate hit, dude. He's like firing jokes, cracking them. Everyone's laughing. He's awesome. Everyone loved him. They loved him so much, he joins the prince and the princess's court. What is not known is that he was the brother of the Freemasonic Lodge. Of course, his gravestone even has an all-seeing eye on it. So that's how you know he's keeping his eye out for good people, and that's what that means. Wink, wink. You know that's not what it means. So Bute's family, this buddy, got John Stuart, I don't know if we'll call him Bute or John Stuart Bute, but anyway, his family earlier had tried to overthrow the Protestant king to put back a Catholic monarchy. Now, again, this is confusing, but like the CIA, it's called purposely blown cover. So you, like the Templars being caught, they're done for now, right? Well, no, they just rebranded and now everyone thinks they're done. And I talked about this yesterday with Odd Man, but the story of the Illuminati, how they were caught. The guy riding his horse and he has all the papers of the Illuminati. He gets struck by lightning. You know the astronomical odds of that? And sure, maybe it happened, but that sounds like a pretty too lucky to happen for the German government. So anyway, this blown cover is a tactic that the Jesuits have used over and over, and our government uses. Maybe they're one and the same. So this alleviates a watchful eye, though. You think, oh, they're done for. They'll never come back. So Bute, he joined the court, their son, and then their son, George William, who was an even bigger basket case than his dad, the partier, he lavished him with attention. He became his mentor, probably because his partying dad was just womanizing, not watching his son, who's, you know, now I guess third in line or whatever. He's the third prince, kind of. But this Stuart, whose family tried to overthrow the government, was being very nice to him. Nothing weird about that. If that was my kid, I'd say, all right, you're out of here, dude, because your family tried to kill my family. I'm not going to let you hang out with my grandson. Eventually, he gets promoted to Lord of the Bedchamber. I thought, what the hell does Lord of the Bedchamber mean? It sounds like he's like, you know what it sounds like he's doing. But no, it's not doing that. It's just the most private position on the court. I guess kings in this time could not put on their clothing and make their bed by themselves. And nothing happened in the heirs of the crown's life that Beauty Stuart wasn't a part of. Should we pull up Stuart? I mean, why not, right? Jesus, Stuart Bute England. What was his first name? Now I forget. Not Frederick William, John Stuart III. Let's look him up. John Stuart III. There he is. Wow, popped right up. Look at that. Here he is. This is the playboy. That's the playboy right there. So yeah, he joins the court, most private position, and he's part of everything. The year following his appointment, the prince, the partier, died at 44 years old. Rumors circulated. So partier, new guy comes in out of nowhere, cozying on up to his son, and then the partier guy dies suddenly at 44. And people, you know, like obviously people died earlier then, but 44, dude, I'm 31. I'm on an awesome trajectory. So this guy wasn't like a total slob. He was eating the best, all clean food then, no processed stuff. So it would be surprising okay, you get where I'm going. Something fishy happened there, most likely. And it was also rumored that this guy, this classy looking stud, was also banging the Princess Augusta, the partier's wife. The king, George II, was losing it, dude. His son's dead. His grandson's like a total mess, probably because he's been abandoned his whole life. And Bute stepped in his father. Parliament started growing stronger than the king. And at this time in England, there was this balance because I think it was 1717 that there was a revolution in England. It was right around like the Freemasons came out and all this stuff. I might have been wrong on that date, but so they made sure the king lost some power and government also had some equal power. And Bute pushed the arts on the boy. So he made him a little puff, right? Doing lots of artwork, lots of drawing, lots of, I'm sure, ballet, botany, also fostering the boy's self-distrust. And at the same time, Leonardo Ricci, the Black Pope, is pushing the whole French and Indian War and a lot of stress on King George II, dude. So he dies at 77, 6 years into the war. George William, the basket case grandson, now King George III. Now let's pull, I mean, God, we got the internet. Not that we'll remember. King George III. And he's the guy that's going to come into everything. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, buddy. Oh, yeah, buddy. That's cool. That's cool. He fearfully turned over his empire to his mentor, the guy watching over him, John Stuart, Bute. So Bute, he bought Parliament and key votes that would ensure Great Britain's, like, would act harshly on the American colonists and basically doing whatever Bute wanted.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Taking land without trial. John Adams even wrote, "The enforcement of Bute's writs of assistance in 1761 was the commencement of controversy between Great Britain and America." So clearly a pivotal role. And if your idea, Black Pope Leonardo Ricci, is I need to start a war to take down the Church of England, well, what better guy to do it than John Stuart? So Bute then, he went to France. So after the French and Indian War, which was the French and the Indians paired up slaughtering English colonists, he went to the treaty because the war's over, and he got all this land from Mississippi back from France and all this everywhere except New Orleans. So he got all this new colonies in America that were once French back to Britain. So it looks like a win on paper, right? And he enforced a law, though, that no colonist could move further west than the Allegheny Mountains. Now, why would you do that? You got all this land. You have your people there. Why would you not allow them to have it? Unless you're trying to sow dissent. Prior to Bute and Ritchie, Americans, which was shocking me, they were super loyal to the mother country, Britain. They shared little to no ill will. Like, there was no issue, right? They paid their taxes. They got a great life, all this land, et cetera, et cetera. But the rise with Ritchie and Bute, radical propagandists. Oh, thanks, dude. The open window with the city below is a nice touch. Thank you. That's just that's actually a mosque behind me. And I'm not joking. It's literally a mosque. Usually they're outside playing basketball. But anyway. So there's peace in America. Bute gets in. Ritchie, they're pulling strings. And who do they send over? They send over maybe some doctors, maybe some priests. No. They send over radical propagandists all over America. Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams. And that's what these guys were. They're our founding fathers, but they're propagandizing the public to go to war. Adams, you know, quote unquote, the father of the American Revolution, he was a Freemason. He mobilized Boston to protest and all these things. And this treaty of the French Indian War in England was set up a way that alienated England. So it made sure, like, if you, back then and now, if you form an alliance with a country, the assumption is you're kind of ganging up, say, example, I hate France. I'm saying, you know what? I hate France. I'm going to ally with Spain. Spain also hates France. Now, this is going to make France very nervous because two people that hate me are going to combine powers and beat me up. Right, that makes sense. So what they did with this French-Indian treaty, they signed it so England could not ally with anyone in Europe. Great if you want to weaken a country. Great. So this is setting the stage for the revolution to be fought against a weakened Great Britain because they have no one to call on should something happen. So England's weakened. They're like bankrupt as well because they fought in a Spanish war that was created by the Jesuits. So they're low on funds. They're barely holding on to their empire. So what do you do then? You stimulate production of hostile, divisive rhetoric in America. You're not free. Oh, you're under a king? That's not freedom. Imagine a republic where everyone, even people that can't read and only take from the system, they have the equal vote as you. Doesn't that sound great? Obviously, that's not the way they worded it. But what's up, Jeremy? What's up, my man? So from the shadows, John Stewart picked a new prime minister, George Grenville. And Grenville said he'd be prime minister as long as the king promised to never have Bute work for him or the country again. What? Right? Wait, what? Why would John Stewart, a guy who's a Jesuit stooge, pick a new prime minister who hates him, who doesn't want to work with him? Because it's all these tricks. They're fake hatreds, fake battles, fake angers, fake hostilities. Bute then continued his process of paying off politicians to create more dynamic situations in America. And just like I said with the Templars earlier, I know some of you guys are kind of coming in now, but it's a fake demise. It breaks it down. You say, oh, okay, well, they're caught. We don't need to worry about them anymore. But they're just working from behind the scenes. You know, just like politicians who retire, or Alan Dulles, that's a great example. Alan Dulles leaves the CIA. JFK forces him out. Do you think he stopped? Alan Dulles was retired, supposedly just enjoying his retirement. Where did he go the day of JFK's assassination? Oh, he went to Langley, the farm, the headquarters of the CIA. But he's retired, right? You guys get this. You're brilliant people. I don't need to explain this to you guys. Brian, I know it's new time today. I said it earlier, my mother-in-law is coming to town and she would not be happy with what I'm talking about. You guys get it. All right. So new PM. Duty taxes increase, which cause smuggling activities, create more dynamic situations in America. All of this stuff. Grenville, the new PM, passes a Sugar and Molasses Act. So now rum making, it's reducing imports of sugar, molasses from Spain, Dutch. They reduced, everything was getting reduced, just like today. Inflation, taxes, it doesn't stimulate the economy. It brings down the economy. Large debts started occurring in America because colonists owned British creditors, because there's less goods, less money. Understood. So the Americans, obviously, they're like, oh, the damn monarchs complaining. So then do you think the Britain would say, okay, yeah, let's pull back? No. They said, let's ban Americans from using paper currency because there was a lack of gold and silver because of lack of trade. So, and then then Grenville said, well, you don't like it. Suggest your taxes you do like. And they didn't get a real condescending response. And so then he passes the 1765 Stamp Act. And this is all important. I don't know if this is boring or not. I love it because I know none of it, but I'm sorry. It's going to get crazy soon. So he passes the Stamp Act, which required a purchasing of stamps to all colonial deeds. All of it. So I'm waiting for the mother-in-law conspiracy. I heard it's false, though. Oh, boy. It's a great conspiracy, Brian. But yeah, so this Stamp Act, dude, this is government. Like, this is literally government. So this Stamp Act that I remember learning about in school briefly, just out of nowhere, they said, you know what, for anything official, so deed, leases, bills, newspaper, contracts, all requires you to purchase this stamp. So it's a money-making scam. It's a literal money grab. You got to pay for this stuff to do whatever you want. Oh, what's up, J-Ring? Thanks for coming for a first time, dude. I hope you enjoy it. So basically, yeah, never before, though, had Parliament dared to pass this ridiculous stamp tax. Again, clear money grab. So anything the colonists now sold, price went up because it had to have this stupid seal on it. So here comes the start of the no taxation without representation, and they refused to work with the Stamp Act. The collector people of Britain, imports to Great Britain decreased 25%, and this is 1765, so we still got some time before the revolution, and tempers are flaring. Ben Franklin, the great Christian man, the grandmaster of Freemasonry in Pennsylvania, said, "They will not find a revolution, but there might very well create one." If British troops were sent, he was referring to. So there was heated tempers, and there was honest members of Parliament, and they were like, "What the hell are we doing? Are we trying to start a revolution? We cannot handle an uprising like this. We are kind of like beaten down at this point." So they removed the Stamp Act. The colony said, "Yeah, we did it," and they've repledged loyalty to George III, this dapper man in his crazy polka dot shirt, yellow polka dot. Damn, dude, he is looking smooth. Hide your women around George III, baby, because he is swiping them all. So the bought-off politicians, like the bad ones, that John Stuart, the mentor of King George that's here right now, they were called the King's Friends. And so they were all the corrupt ones. And I think that's probably like a joke, like, they're King's Friends, but they're not really the King's Friends, you know? Hilarious. So they put the Stamp Act gets pulled, but they put new taxes on the colonists. They were pointless. Like, these taxes, dude, they netted them $40,000. And this wasn't about the money. That's the point. It wasn't enough to be like, the Stamp Act, which was a true money grab. This next tax was to literally piss off the colonists. That, it was a jab at them, say, you know, like, we run you. And this, again, was 1767. So angers keep rising. And then in 1770, a small crowd of Bostonians threw snowballs at redcoats, and they fired into the crowd, killing four, wounding more. And this in the papers becomes the Boston Massacre, John Adams, the massacre. You see how they use these words? Boston Massacre. Is four people a massacre? No. But a massacre, if you're trying to start a war, that's the best word you can use. For innocent people. Like, we don't know the story. It's being told by who we won. Who knows if maybe like these, maybe they put rocks, whatever. You know, like, it sounds like a pretty, like, that makes them put in this vile light. Like, oh, they can't handle a snowball. Is it really just a snowball? I don't know. But John Adams ran to the governor and said, "Get these redcoats out of here." And the government ran and held up in a castle. And Parliament, they said, they're actually losing money on these taxes. They're not, it's literally just a jab. They were losing money. So they removed them. They removed the stamp and these extra ones. They keep the tea tax and add a 3-pound pence to prove that they are still our subjects. So most of the colonists' tea was smuggled from Holland anyway. So they literally didn't care. And we're going to get into this deeply in a second. So 1.3 pounds in 1769. It was 4.2 million by 1771. So their tempers are, they're kind of like cooling off. So the instigators, Adams, Henry, Jefferson, they took advantage of this peacetime to agitate. But people were happy. Merchants, people, colonists, everyone's making money. There's no ill will. So if you need a war, this needs a change. And Ritchie knew exactly, the Black Pope knew exactly what to do to make this happen. Let's look up Leonardo Ritchie. Leonardo Ritchie, Black Pope. I think because his name's like not really Leonardo, it's like with an I. Ritchie, Jesuit. All right, here he is. It says Matteo, but you know, I don't know if this is the same one. Oh no, this guy says China. Who knows? Who the hell knows? All right. That's not him, so we'll ignore that, but we'll keep him up because he looks cool. He looks like a cool dude. So tensions are heating up with the Stamp Act, and what would anyone do in this situation, right? You know, if you want to keep you're the king. You have all this new land. It is bringing in buco bucks. You're back on top, baby. Are you going to start a war? Is that what you want? Is that what you want? Or would you try to maintain peace because it's making you money, your empire is growing, they're still loyal subjects to you? Would you start a revolution? No. So what do? They asked Rome to ordain an American bishop, of course, because these Protestants, you know, they were chased by Catholics, but they would love a Catholic priest there in the New World. The people they were running from, bring them over. So they wanted to do this to establish order in the colonies and restore discipline, make it possible for colonial America to confirm Catholics. And what do you think Rome said to that? Well, wouldn't you know, the letter never arrived to Rome. I'm sure Lorenzo Ricci had nothing to do with that little mishap. It was open somewhere, though. It was open in London. The Church of England was happy to engage in this discussion of sending a bishop over. So at this point, 50% of the American colonists were Protestant. They saw that how they are losing numbers and they're already beefing with England and their church. Ricci saw his perfect moment to raise tensions just a little bit more. And the colonists did not want either. They called it a Trojan horse being let in the gates of the New World. This scare of a bishop riled up the colonists more than any tax could do, because they literally left their homelands because these same churches have been chasing them for hundreds of years. I'm sure they lost family members during inquisitions. I'm sure, blah, 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 blah. You get it. If your enemy says, hey, why don't we send a people over here? You wouldn't mind, right? You'd be cool with that. So now they're suspicious. The colonists are second guessing who is who. Just like when we call someone a fed or a shill in our community here, sometimes like we legit might be right, but calling everyone that will never be able to unite. It's a good trick, isn't it? Because yeah, equal love, relax, man. Love it. But just like we do in this community here, like, he's a fed, he's a shill, blah, 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 blah. And I do the same thing, and I shouldn't do that. But this is a great trick that they've been using since then, because now you can't, any movement is fractured a little bit because you have a new guy, he's got great things to say, or an old guy, he's got great things to say. And you're like, huh, he's got money. How does he have so much money? How does he do this? Unless he never talks about this, stuff like that, right? So that's what they did. So now all the colonists are like, damn, is this a Jesuit priest? Damn, is this a Church of England priest? And so 1960s and 70s, 200 years later, Jesuit priests in South America made lots of posters and propaganda about corrupt presidents and country leaders to oust them and cause chaos. And it was a similar type of activity going on in the colonies. They would often depict in the South America Jesus like Rambo with guns and stuff. I don't know. I guess that's like, maybe that's in the Bible, you know, him grabbing an AK and just spraying, but pretty sure it's not. Jesus doesn't promote violence, obviously. I'm joking. He does not promote using lethal force to strengthen his church. You know who does do that, though? The Catholic Church. Yeah, Rome does. And if that meant fighting a war to keep a bishop out of America, the colonists were so game. So again, Ritchie's goal is to start a war between these new lands and Britain. Why? Because he needs to weaken Britain to install all of his people everywhere. And Britain is the top dog of Europe. So again, you control the top dog. You control this new land that you're going to create, make the new top dog, which has happened. You need to control it from the beginning. But so two bishops were consecrated, an Anglican and a Roman Catholic. Now, oh baby, now we're getting good. Now we're getting crazy. John Carroll. Oh, there we go. Here we go. This chubby man. So the Roman Catholic ordained bishop was John Carroll. He's a Jesuit son of Maryland. His family owned Maryland. He was the richest man in America, guys, in America. So wonder what happened to that wealth. I imagine it's just hidden better. But anyway, regardless of the shill thing, what's a shill for truth? What's it called? I don't know. I don't know what that means. You know what a shill is, right? Everyone knows. Someone that's like shilling for cash, I guess. I don't even know the right definition. But Joe John Carroll, richest man. Carol, who will come up here and there in the show he did last episode, more this show, would often have King George III come by and stop by his castle in England. So clearly he's allied with, possibly with King George III. Bishop Carroll, this guy, would also become a Holy See direct representative in the United States, like literal top boss stuff. No priest was above him. Everyone had to listen to him no matter what. He was essentially the black pope of the New World. The first Anglican bishop ordained in 1784 was Reverend Samuel Seabury of Connecticut. Now, Sammy Boy here, the first ordained bishop of the Anglican Church, was a Freemason. That's weird because I thought the Freemasons were banned in like from the cat. Well, anyway, he was a Freemason. He was consecrated in Scotland. They did that because they didn't want to do it in America because they worried they'd be killed. Because, you know, the Church of England chased out the colonists. You guys get this. I'm sorry if I'm explaining. Oh, Brian, never need to apologize. So, Sam, you would think Sammy would hate Roman Catholicism. The English hated the Catholics, right? Since he was ordained by the Church of England. But he was one of the few in the Anglican Church that had loyalty to King James II after his abdication and refused to take an oath to his successors, William of Orange, Mary Stuart, because they were both Protestants. Thus, who's his allegiance to? His allegiance is to Rome. So you got both the bishops of America, the first bishops, both have allegiances to Rome. Also fun to note, James II, King James of England, loved dressing up in Roman drag. I say this because America is Rome 2.0, or just a continuation of the Roman Empire. But he liked to dress in Roman drag, so he was wearing like a toga, but a girl toga. I'm sure that was totally normal in the day. Joke, not totally normal, ever. George Washington would become a member of Seabury's church. Let's look him up, because that's like awesome. Not like just the awesome connection. There he is. So this guy was the Anglican bishop, J.W., was a member of his group, his church group. So Seabury, he's loyal to Rome. He's the president of the new nation, is a member of his congregation. They're both Freemasons. So what does that tell you? Does that tell you that, oh yeah, they probably didn't agree with each other on anything? No, they hated each other. They didn't like each other at all. No, that's not what it tells you at all. Is that light too bright? I'm going to put it down one. I should have turned on the light behind me, but...
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We'll go with there. That looks good. I'm a little greasy. I did some squats before the show. I got, I'm almost at 315 for a few reps. So got to keep eating though. You got to eat big to get big, right? So Seabury and GW, they're boys. The president of our new nation, both Freemasons. Clearly they're both going to have a connection to Rome. He's not going to be like totally different beliefs and be a member of Reverend Seabury's congregation, right? If I was at a church and they were preaching about woke stuff, like the church, that's beautiful church that's right outside my house, having flags up of the state-sponsored religion, I wouldn't go to that church. I don't go to that church. So they shared similar beliefs. So we're in 1770. Rome is kind of lessening its hatred for the England, and many British visitors are going down to Rome to hang out with Clement XIV. And oh boy, now we're getting the good stuff. Okay, now we're getting to the goddamn good stuff. All right, I guess there's this. Let's see if I'm trying to find Charles Philippe Stourton, but I don't know if he's. I don't know. Okay, I can't find him. So anyway. So Charles Philippe Stourton. So Charlie, he is a nephew Oh, that's a good George Washington quote. It was not my intention to doubt that the doctrines of the Illuminati and the principles of Jacobianism had not spread in the United States. On the contrary, nobody is truly more satisfied of this fact than I am. Yeah, dude. He was a Freemason, everybody. Like, they brainwash us as kids to think that these guys are our founding fathers. That's the phrase they use because they want us to worship our politicians like God, like a divinely chosen person. That's what they want. That's what they had in Rome with Pontifex Maximus, with Caesar. He was the God King. That's what they want for our politicians. And do you see that happening? Do you see that people more and more stand these politicians? So anyway, this is big. Charles Felipe Stourton. Charlie, he's the nephew of Dukes Thomas and Edward Stourton. And Thomas Stourton was the originator of colonial Freemasonry. He brought it in. So his nephew, he's not going to be a nobody. Edward was connected with the corrupt Lord Brute, the advisor to George III, the John Stuart guy we just talked about. Was with deep sea symbolism, was it on purpose? Yes, Brian. And we're going to get into some of it today. Next episode, it's all that. But yeah, all on purpose, dude. Everything. So Charlie heads on down to Rome with his Jesuit college professor. None other than the amazing John Carroll. Let me just go back to John Carroll. So Charlie heads on down to Rome with John Carroll. Now, why would an Anglican... John Carroll. Sorry, never mind. John Carroll was a Jesuit priest. So they're enjoying this grand tour of Europe starting in 1771. They reach Rome in 72. Ritchie appoints Carroll to position of prefect of sodality. Now, what's that, you may ask? It is the chief organizer of laymen for the promotion of some form of social action. Now, what does that sound? What in the hell does that sound like to you? The Black Pope appoints Carroll to the chief organizer of laymen for the promotion of some form of social action. Now, what in the hell type of social action would Ritchie, one from the richest family in the New World, to promote? A big one comes to mind, what action he's hoping Carroll will promote, but we will continue. So we always talk about the power of the press, and even then, maybe almost even more so. So in the paper back home in Maryland, there were like these write-ins. This was a funny story. And they're just so smart, guys. Like, I know they're evil, but they are brilliant. So there's a newspaper in Maryland, obviously. And people have like writing columns like they do today or they did 20 years ago, whatever. To like bring your opinions and stuff like that. So there was this one, people would be anonymous. So it was called First Citizen. So this guy, First Citizen, he writes a column, whatever, and no one usually knows who they were, but word got out that this was John Carroll writing this as First Citizen. So a second citizen responds to whatever he wrote in the paper. He gets bashed, calling him a disenfranchised Catholic, a weenie hut, a square, an L7 weenie, all these mean things. Obviously, he didn't say that, but he called him all these mean things, and this was the public sentiment now on John Carroll. They hated Catholics now they say, oh, poor John, he's getting hammered in the press by this second citizen guy. Oh, poor guy, we gotta stand up for him. So almost perfect, right? That's perfect for the new prefect of sodality, that the colonists that used to hate him now feel bad for him. They want to ally with him. I lost my spot. Okay, so people started defending him. They despised the second citizen. Get this. For bigotry. It's like we do the same things over and over again. It's exhausting. So they said, oh, that guy's a bigot. We're going to stand up for John. And America had a new hero, John Carroll. So a Roman Catholic who was beat up and advocating for a new political order, a free order. As I said, John Carroll is in the New World saying, we're not free under the king. And now people love him because he got picked on in the newspaper and they're listening to him. And he's the richest man of Maryland. So back to these trips. Carroll Philip Stouderton. Stouderton, who studied at a Jesuit college, and hopefully you listen to last episode. I briefly talked about it. So both, you know, obviously we just talked Carol Stouderton. He's studied education at a Jesuit school. I talked about last episode how the Jesuit priest that like ran the big ethics group at, I think, St. Omer's or one of the colleges, he talked about how adultery isn't really adultery because adultery means idolatry. It's not, so you can lie. It's called casuistry. And they taught their people how to lie morally, how you weren't really lying. If you broke into a house and the judge says you broke in through the window, you could lie and say it wasn't a window, it was a skylight, right? Loopholes. Why priests are teaching ethical classes like this, that should explain to you exactly what the Jesuits were like. That doesn't teach the younger generation to be honest. It teaches them to be crafty and witty and how to lie without getting caught. So he also did spiritual exercises. He was a Freemason, again. He's actually the same age as Hamilton. And Alexander Hamilton was a banker's bitch boy. But at this time, Hamilton was in New York making revolutions pamphlets at colleges. Also fighting for the Federal Reserve in those early years. I'm sure they weren't working for the same team. And history will tell you that Carroll and Stouderton were just sightseeing, but Carroll's journal tells a totally different story about them meeting every big player there was to meet in Europe. Oh man, we're going to get into our kids. They come into this story too, the Rothschilds. So he met with Bishop von Hanthmann, was one of their guys. So Bishop Hanthmann wrote a book under a fake name about how to get Protestants back into Roman Catholicism's fold. And he had this plan about them knowing they were following an invisible light, not knowing they were following an invisible light pope. And the book was never translated into English. The church banned the book, the Catholic Church. And this is, again, is this trick like, oh, we got it. We got him. You don't need to worry about it. We banned it. Now you won't have to read it. We banned it. What does banning do to anything? And powerful people keep saying, oh, you better not read Bishop Hanthmann's book. It's a horrible book. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to read the book. And the book is explaining how to trick Protestants into coming back into the Roman Catholicism fold. Regardless, Hanthmann was a spiritual counterpart of the ruler of Hesse-Hanover. All right, we'll pull up Hesse-Hanover second. And that search stunk. All right, this guy. And he was on our episodes with the Rothschilds too. So this is going to all come into play. So he was the spiritual like advisor of this guy. Now, Frederick of Hesse, this lovely gentleman here, he's been showing up more and more in my episodes. He was married to the aunt of the King of England, George III's uncle. He was married to the aunt of the King of England. He was born a Protestant. He was a Rosicrucian. Jesuits converted him, but secretly he remained a Rosicrucian, which was controlled by the Jesuits. So it's a Gnostic belief set. That's all Rosicrucianism is. They believe in this ancient Kabbalistic knowledge, numbers, gematria, all that's numerology, all that stuff. So he was a Rosicrucian, and he was Europe's richest ruler. Much of his business was handled by Prince William, also a Rosicrucian and Freemason. What was William helping with his father's business? Oh, you know, the things that rich people often like to do, they sell us. So what made Frederick II of Hesse so rich and his son, Prince William of Orange? They would train young males of Hesse, train them on up, then sell them to their cousin, George, King George III, to fight along with the Redcoats wherever they seemed deemed fit. Every time a Hessian soldier was killed, William would get more cash. And so more and more, and his stack got bigger and bigger and bigger, making Benjamins and Benjamins. He said, damn, I got to invest this money. Now, he has a banker right now, and his banker is making him a buco bucks. It's making him the richest people in Europe. Who's his banker? Oh, guys, we all know who his banker is. He's been using this banker since 1769. You might have heard him before. His name is Meyer Amschel Rothschild. Dun, dun, dun. And did you know that? So I know what you're thinking. Well, the R kids, they're not Jesuits. They're not Catholics. Like, why is he working with a Jesuit-ran guy? Well, I don't know if you knew this, but they bear the title Guardians of the Vatican. Oh, my God, this fax would be crazy. Guardians of the Vatican Treasury. And the Vatican Treasury holds all the imperial wealth of Rome. The Vatican wealth grows during war, just like everyone's does, the winter, just like the Jesuits' empowerment came from them at war instead of the church at peace. That's how they got started. Like, well, we're fighting Protestants. You need us to secretly invade or infiltrate. And this fact was so crazy. Oh my God. Hold on to your seats, people. This is wild. Wild. So Caesar's soldiers protected themselves in battles with shields, obviously. The shields were painted red. Red shield was identified with the very life of the church because it was Rome's red shields that were conquering new lands. So what does Rothschild stand for or mean in German? It means red shield. What are they? What's their title? They're guardians of the Vatican treasury. What does a shield do? It guards. Brilliant, dude. And maybe this could be a conspiracy or just a coincidence. But to me, that's a lot of symbolism. That's a lot of Kabbalah. And we're going to continue going. There's more to this. And also it was brilliant. No one would ever guess that they were controlling the Vatican wealth. But they're famous for helping nations go to war. We know that. All of Europe's battles since the 1700s were paid for and financed by the Rothschilds. So they're working hand in hand with the Jesuits. And also another Kabbalistic thing. So you know how Meyer Amschel put all of his, those damn Bowers. Yeah. Oh no, I just scrolled up. Oh my God. Okay, there we go. Got it. So he had five sons or seven sons, and he put them all in different powers of Europe, different countries to start banks there. Disgusting. And I did an episode on him if you want to go listen to that. But the name of their firm was Meyer Amschel Rothschild and Sons. What does that spell? That spells Mars. Mar. And this is called Notarion. 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 It's a Kabbalistic method of putting words with the initials. They're so, like, dude, they follow this religion, this Kabbalistic religion, to a T. They believe it works. And maybe I'm sure demons help them. Well, that spells Mars. So Mars, along with being the red planet, is the Roman god of war. Is that a conspiracy or just a coincidence, dude? The red shields of Rome, the Mars, all this stuff. Now, Carol and Staterton did not say they met with the Rothschilds in their European travels, but one would expect that if they're the prefect of sodality, John Carroll, in charge of social events or whatever you want to call them, would need to talk finances at some point with the church's most secret trustee. And using this trick that the Arkids are known for, America needed a financial crisis to be pulled into the war, as all countries usually do. And since the 1700s, who's been behind them? If you control all the wealth, you can create a financial crisis. Pretty self-explanatory. So Carroll's journal does indicate that he entered Frankfurt, Mainz, where the Rothschilds lived, in early 1772. And I'm sure it's totally a coincidence, everyone, that a couple months later, the Bank of England went through a severe credit reduction, ruining, bankrupting, impoverishing all these merchants in the New World. None of this was resolved until after the war. They shut down their businesses. Any loans, collected. Can't you pay them back? Now they have no money to buy the goods to sail them over, etc., etc. Slowing down trade, slowing down exchange of goods. So now someone with the wealth of William of Hesse and the Black Papacy would have power to change things up with the Bank of England because they control the wealth and they control these people in these powerful positions. And it was widely known how they both enriched themselves during the Revolutionary War. It was a win-win for Carroll, the Rothschilds, Staterton, all of them, the Jesuits. Staterton and Carroll, they end up leaving Rome 1773. Staterton went back to his dad. Carroll went back to the Jesuit college, St. Omer's. At the same time, the British, oh God, this is, see, dude, these two episodes are like the best ones of this series. Oh my God. So at this time, the British East India Company is presented those corrupt king friends who we talked about, they're just corrupt politicians, with an idea. to antagonize America even more. And what does this idea include? Some tea, baby. Oh, yeah. So East India was a major subsidizer of the Jesuit mission to Beijing. Was it because they really wanted to spread Roman Catholicism? That's what East India, Amazon. Amazon's paying for your religion's missionaries to go to a foreign land. They're hardcore Christians, dude. That's it. Sure, we'll make some money, but we're Christians. That's why we do this, right? This is facetious. I'm being very facetious. So, or were they spreading Christianity going to Beijing, or were they trying to use these trips to secure lucrative commercial favors for the company, gaining monopolies on tea, spices, saltpeter, that's for explosions, silks, and my favorite, your favorite, the world's favorite, monopoly on opium. Ooh, who doesn't love some opium? I did a lot for 10 years. Loved opium or heroin. But yeah, no. Right. I'm trying to do a joke. It can't be like too boring. You know, we gotta be funny. We gotta be making moves and smiles. So the East India Trading Company literally owes its existence to the Jesuits. And let's pull them up. Let's see what photo comes up. East India Trading Company. Okay. Cool. East India Trading Company. Okay. So this is how this came to be. And I always wanted to know this, so I hope you find this interesting. I don't know why the reference made me think of Ghost of Mars movie. But so East India Trading Company, this is how they started. This is a quick digression. In 1583, four young travelers set out from London with letters of introduction from the Queen to the Emperor of China. Cool. At some point, they get arrested around the Persian Gulf by these Portuguese for illegally crossing the line of demarcation. Portuguese, isn't that amazing? They're like the size of like half of Pennsylvania dominating these countries. I just find that crazy. Brazil, I mean, wow. Right? They speak Portuguese in Brazil? Yeah. So they get caught by the Portuguese. This line was created, this line of demarcation, by Pope Alessandro, whose mistress, we talked about the first episode, was the next pope, Paul III's sister. He had a naked statue made of her, and they actually covered up the boobies 200 years later because they were just sitting out. Jesus. But these guys are infallible. Okay. Yeah, they're infallible. So the four guys, they're sent in chains to the western coast of India. It's called Goa. And then a friend saves them, totally just because he wanted to be a good guy, Thomas Stevens. Thomas, such a good guy saving these four traders or merchants. He was a director of University of Goa and a Jesuit priest. Wouldn't you know? Of course he was. Now, nothing is done for free, right? Stevens needed something in return to free these four guys. He didn't love them or whatever. So one of the four becomes a Jesuit priest. The other two held posts in the Goa government, which is Jesuit ran. And the fourth guy, Ralph Fitch, he proceeded on to China under Ignatian oath. And just to remind you, the Ignatian oath of the Jesuits, like only the top guys, most important guys had to do it. But they go in a room with the Black Pope and the Pope, and they hold a sign like, kill all impious rulers. They hold a bloody knife, their blood, to their heart, and there's a black statue that they worship there. Even though the Bible tells you not to depict our people because you'll be worshiping the wrong God. Jesuits know better. They know better than God. Come on. So in 1591, Fitch returns to England, and like Marco Polo before him, he said, dude, we can make so much bank in China. He told the Queen, like, dude, they got this. They got silks. They got opium. People are going to love opium. And in 1599, the East India Trading Company is formed. By 1772, damn, 200 years. I wonder if Amazon will be around 200 years. It was governed by Freemasons, whose grandmaster was the ninth Lord Peter. Peter's family actually bankrolled the original Jesuit mission to England in the 16th century. So now this powerful corporation that's working directly in England was started by Jesuits, essentially funded by Jesuits, the same family that funded Jesuits to go spread Jesuit propaganda or whatever. Yeah, dude, I got to do, Weez Plato's talking about the Lee bloodline and opium trade. And I know Fritz Springmeier talks, I got to do that book, even though I've read it before. That's such a crazy, And whether it's all, it's still very interesting. So yeah, so Peter's family, he's a Jesuit family, is running this most powerful company in the world. And East India was the most powerful member in 1773 of East India was this guy, Lord Shelburne. And this is another name I talked about in the second episode. Shelburne worked for Lord Bute, the guy who took in was the mentor to George III that eventually left to provoke the French and Indian War. Lord Shelburne was also present during the treaty, which made sure England had no allies after the French and Indian War. And in the coming social action of John Carroll that's about to happen, the Revolutionary War, that's what Shelburne was setting up. Shelburne, once again, was needed to cause some chaos in America since there was relatively peace in 1770 with the removal of all those stupid taxes. Okay, so we got East India Company, right? Jesuit ram. We got Shelburne. We got tea. What's next? I think many of you know the answer. 17 million pounds of surplus tea were chilling in America. I don't know who the hell this is, but Jesus, I just couldn't take my eyes off her. So yeah, 17 million pounds of surplus tea were in America. 17 million! Q post right there. This could not be released for sale until a duty of 1 shilling per pound was paid to the crown. If the king just said, you know what, guys, it's okay. This tea would be cheaper than the smuggled Dutch tea and the dutied English tea. Like, everyone but the king would win. And he'd win because no one in America would flip the F out that already they're ready to, dude. It's a powder keg. So if he just said, you know what, sell the tea, whatever. I'll get it back later. That's what I would do if I was a ruler. I'd say, okay, or pay me a quarter a shilling per pound or whatever. You'd negotiate. So what did the king do? What do you guys think the king did? He didn't just keep the 1 shilling per pound. He raised it to 3 shillings per pound. And in 1773, the Tea Act went into effect. As you expected, the merchants flipped out, as they knew. Propaganda is flying everywhere, organizing colonists. Like, this is such an injustice to the tea merchants, because it didn't affect the people. That's what's important. It's affecting the tea merchants. Eminem says, I look like Johnny Cerucci. Damn, man. I don't know if that's a compliment. I think Johnny's a handsome man. So thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, so they raise the price, and the merchants now there and the propagandists, our founding fathers, they're organizing everyone. Like, this is a direct attack on all Americans' freedoms. How many times do they do that? Just like Ukraine. Every goddamn war they try to pull us into. And you can feel bad for a country and people losing their homes without sending your fellow countrymen to go die for it. Because that's not your job. That's not your job, right? I don't want to go die for a foreign country. No one else should have to either, unless that's what you want. And there's people doing that, and they're dying. So they're happy. Good. But yeah, so they're like, the merchants, direct attack on us, blah, 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 blah. So then a few weeks later in 1773, the Jesuits were abolished for all eternity. You think our boy John Carroll would be devastated, right? No, he said this is good. It will secularize the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, which basically means now these people, these Jesuits who've been banned, they can get rid of it's known they're a Jesuit priest, that's gone. Now they can rise the ranks as lawyers, doctors, politicians, government officials, health officials, whatever, artists. Some joined the Freemasons, some joined encyclopedia companies. You can see the power that would be. The encyclopedia for hundreds of years was the absolute truth on something. So if you have Jesuits writing the absolute truth with their ability of causatory and obscuring facts, you can see the power of that. And just some reminders, the French Jesuit who was a doctor, he created the guillotine. Adam Weishaupt, dismissed from a Jesuit college, took the radical Rosicrucians and formed the Illuminati. So see, these Jesuits, they did rise to do great things. Terrible, but great things. I think that's a Dumbledore quote. Also important to note, I talked about how the Illuminati got caught. Riding a horse, got struck by lightning. I'm sure that's what happened. So again, I already talked about that a million times. So Richie, at this time, he's in England, because he got, the Jesuits are done for. So he's quote unquote arrested. The Black Pope is arrested and put on house arrest for 5 weeks. He was at English College. English College's dean was John Mattingly. Who's John Mattingly? John Mattingly. John Mattingly was said to be the only American Jesuit in Rome. You want to guess where Mattingly was from? Shockingly, right? He's from John Carroll's hometown in Maryland. A graduate of St. Omer's John Carroll's University and his great friend. Carroll, who also departed Rome 5 weeks before Ritchie's arrest. So what was Ritchie doing for 5 weeks under a British roof in the custody of a young American Jesuit at a time that American merchants were incensed at being cheated out of tea profits by a new law sponsored by British Freemasons whose grandmaster happened to be Ritchie and his group? I'm sure maybe Ritchie was conferring with members of the British East India Trading Company, the company that was English College's major patron. Maybe discussing where England should ship the tea to which ports to put him. Sure. No, I'm sure that's not it. I'm sure he was nothing nefarious while he's hanging on house arrest for 5 weeks. But anyway, Ritchie, while Ritchie was in house arrest, Parliament and East India Trading Company shipped £500,000 of tea to Boston, New York City, Philadelphia, and Charleston with a special chosen group of merchants. So maybe Ritchie gave Mattingly an idea of how to push over the anger that had been simmering there since 1758 that would symbolize the Americans' frustration with England. And maybe this is a big stretch. It's just similar locations and people. I don't think so. Like, what, was Ritchie just dying in captivity? And that's what history will tell you. He was suffering through an Inquisition during his 5 weeks of house arrest, not planning the how to spark the revolution. Oh, okay. He was suffering through an Inquisition. The Inquisition was ran by the Jesuits. Do you think Ritchie got tortured and beat up during his Inquisition? Oh, and they administered the Inquisition since 1542. Shockingly, they got no good information from the Inquisition or interrogation of... Brian says they had good intentions. Yeah, you're right, dude. Amazon, they have got good intentions too. Wink, wink. All right. So much is going on in this year of 1773. And I just said how the Jesuits were rescinded. Like they all got banned. The cops or whatever descended on John Carroll's college. He was arrested. The students, staff, everything was taken from Carroll. Again, how many times have we seen this? Oh no, poor John. Poor John. He's got all of his things taken from him. The richest man of Maryland is finished for. But wait, a shining knight rides through the horizon. Carroll, he's sitting in his cell, and his travel buddy, his cousin, his travel buddy's cousin, comes in and rescues Carroll. He escorts Carroll across the English Channel to his mansion castle. So Carroll, you still have Ritchie in house arrest. Carroll's writing the Austrian government saying, come on, give us some dough back, dude. And also he was decorating the chapel in the West Wing. So he needs Art, this cousin of the Stourton who traveled with Carroll to Rome. He's got this beautiful place, a huge castle, and he wants to decorate it. And you can't expect a man to decorate himself. So he gets, and I know these are a lot of names, and I apologize, a lot of names, but the point is, we'll continue, but the point of these names is they're all powerful people and they're all doing their little part. They're all connected. They all know each other. And that's the same thing we have today, right? So this Jesuit named Francis Thorpe was an intelligence broker and he knew all the comings and goings of Rome, which would be useful. So, I mean, this guy's house was a favorite meeting place, this castle that took Carroll in for English nobility. Also odd, but Thorpe taught at St. Omer Carroll's College when Carroll was a student there. See how these people, they're all connected. They all have a similar goal and they all want, you know, the same thing. Oh, my mother-in-law will be here in 15 minutes. Also, Carroll's new residence was just a short ride away from a guy named Ben Franklin in London. Franklin, if you guys remember, was loved by the Jesuits, Grand Master of Freemasonry, happened to be in England representing the commercial interest at the time of the 13 colonies before the crown. So between the three of these guys, you have Ben Franklin, Grand Master Freemason, he's part of the colony. Thorpe, he's got all the info on Rome. And John Carroll, the Jesuit priest, rich guy. All hanging out with each other. All different goals, supposedly. They should be on totally different ends of what they want. But they're all hanging out. Again, it's fakery, right? These guys all have the same real goal. They just assume leadership positions to do that. And the 6 months Carroll resided in England was during the time that the Tea Act took place. So during the night of December 16th, 1773, a gang of Indians boarded the certain ships in Boston Harbor and ripped open 342 chests of tea valued at $90,000. So this is kind of like a reverse hate crime, right? These people dressed up to look like Indians. Witnesses said they were Indians, but they were Freemasons, just dressed like Indians. So England responds with legislation closing the port of Boston to trade, forbidding town meetings without consent of governor, putting Hessian and British troops in the city. And one, if the troops did any violence, there was no they would just move them to a different town. So they could do whatever they want. I imagine a lot of bad things were happening because they wouldn't get punished. They were encouraged to cause harm. And then they passed the Quebec Act, which cut off claims to Massachusetts, Connecticut, Virginia, New York to their western lands, putting them in the hands of the French Catholic jurisdiction of Quebec. So all these punitive actions are coming out for this dumping of $90,000 of tea on these Americans that now tensions are freaking the F out, right? Then what you do is if you're trying to start a war, you add your good propagandists, your radical guys to get every American to sympathize with the Tea Partiers. Suddenly, independence wasn't a radical idea. It was a rational move because the paper is so powerful. So powerful. People tell you you need to be upset. You're upset. The news says, oh, feel bad for this person. Feel bad for this country. And yeah, it's sad. But do you feel bad for the other 1,000 people that are being abused by your own government? No, because you don't see it. The news is so powerful. Marriage itself is a construct like the Quebec Act. Oh, that's funny. But anyway, so the Massachusetts governor, he's replaced. The governor brought 4,000 more troops to quarter in Boston, vowing severe discipline, and the colonists vowed severe resistance. King III George said the Americans must triumph or submit. War is coming, baby. War is coming. In 1774, Carroll, this was huge. He did his job in Europe, what he had to do. He traveled and met with the Rothschilds, met with the Black Pope, met with Ben Franklin. He sails home in 1774 to see his ailing mother. He's so sad. She's dying. He hasn't seen her in 25 years. So kind of weird timing, if you would agree. That's a little weird timing to just, you know, things are about to explode in this country. And the guy that helped create the chaos in England decides to go home. All right. So he heads home, and we're going to stop there because I don't want my mother-in-law walking in on us all talking. But so next episode, dude, we'll do the history of Maryland with John Carroll and why he's and this, that, why, and that'll be a perfect place to do it because, and it's going to be a long episode, next one. So John Carroll, though, he's this Jesuit priest. And the next episode is going to be all Washington, D.C. symbolism. Dude, everything is pagan worship. All of it. I think I told you, the one quote is, I truly wish well for Jack. You're funny, Brian. But like the one quote, revolution to tyranny is obedience to God. All these things are founding fathers. All the Latin phrases put on our dollar, our money, and on our buildings, on the Capitol building. All of this stuff is pagan worship that's been tricked in us to believe that it's a Christian nation. It was never a Christian nation. Never. And all of this stuff, all the symbolism, the Statue of Liberty that's put on the Capitol building and after the Civil War is a pagan goddess. The phrases on our dollar bill E Pluribus Unum and all these, they come from Rome's pagan books, the Aeginad or Virginad, that they worshipped at the time, that talks about these virgin or these pagan gods and how you should die for your country. You should worship your god king. That was like their Bible in pagan Rome. That's the phrases we use. The same phrases that are in those books. Do you think it's odd that our Christian founding fathers forced everyone to revolt and have a revolution with death and murder and chaos? None of that is Christian. None of it. But they did it. And they tricked everyone into thinking, but you know what? Church does value violence to gain a stronger church. The Roman church. The pagan Roman church. And boy, we got like a crazy episode. Maybe I'll do it a little earlier. We'll see. Maybe I'll do it like Monday or something. But guys, thanks for watching. I love you all. I'm sorry we got to go early. I just can't have my lovely mother-in-law. She loves me. She does not like my brother-in-law at all. He gets killed all the time. She yells at him and stuff. She's a tough lady. I wouldn't mess with her. But loves me. You know, who wouldn't, dude? I got a big smile on my face. But thanks, guys, for supporting. I'm Jack Allen from Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. I look forward to our next show. Sorry it was a little short, but thanks for coming. I was surprised I had so many of you, even though it was so early. So thank you, guys. It means the world to me. I love hanging out with you. Wheeze Plato, Brian, Susan, all of you guys. Jeremy, thanks for stopping by. Much love. You mean so much to me, guys. And have a great day, guys. Peace.